This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. For the better part of 3 years now, a lot of people simply haven't had the nerve or the heart to open the envelopes that brought their 401k statements. Big chunks of retirement plans that once looked surefire have gone up in smoke. Over the past 20 years, about 50 million Americans entrusted their retirement funds in 401ks, and lately the numbers have been so bad that some analysts say there's no way to make up the lost ground, and a few are muttering ripoff. More, though, say that 401ks are still the way to go, though they could be better, and we could do a better job managing them. Amid the gloomy news that some companies are cutting back or eliminating their 401k matches, that fewer new employees are signing up, and that a lot of us are borrowing against our retirement, there are some rays of sunshine. The great majority of investors have hung in for the long haul. The stock market shows at least some signs of recovery, and there could be some new savings opportunities relatively soon. The Bush administration has a number of proposals, from lifetime savings accounts to retirement savings accounts. Later this hour, we'll report on one of the more unusual bank withdrawals in history. According to the New York Times, one of Saddam Hussein's sons brought a note from his father to the bank and went home with three trailer trucks stuffed with cash. First, though, 401ks. How bad is it? Have you had to scale back your retirement or put it off a few more years? In retrospect, were expectations unrealistic? And what are your plans now, and what's the best way to make up losses? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or you can email us, TOTN@npr.org. Joining us now from her office in New York City is Ruth Simon, a staff writer for the Wall Street Journal, who wrote a piece recently with the alarming headline, "Why Even a Rally Won't Save You," referring to America's 401k. So good of you to join us.
Thank you for having me.
In that article, you wrote, there are a host of growing problems deepening the effects of the bear market for the estimated 52 million people with 401ks. What's going on?
One of the fundamental problems is that the 401k system started out as just a way for people to save for retirement in a tax-advantaged way, but it's grown to be a very, very important part of people's retirement futures. And in effect, what it's done is turned all of us into our own pension fund managers. And many of us don't have either the skills or the time or the expertise to do a real good job of that.
Hmm. Now, the number of Americans contributing to 401ks is going down?
Well, what's happening is that participation rates, which means how many people are in their 401k plans, are going down a bit. You've seen a shrinkage in the number of new hires signing up for 401k plans, which has brought participation rates to the lowest level since at least the early 1990s. And that's troubling because many of these people are younger workers who are going to have to save through their 401ks if they're going to have enough money for retirement. But another troubling problem is we're starting to hear some talk that people already in their 401k plans, some of them are not participating. It's not huge numbers, but the fact that it's happening at all is a troubling development.
Mm-hmm. Now, also, some companies, one of the attractions of it was a lot of companies would encourage you to invest in this by matching at least some of the donations. Some companies are stopping that?
What we're seeing is companies get into financial distress, they're temporarily cutting or suspending their matching contributions. And one of the big reasons many people do save in their 401ks is for every dollar you put in up to a certain level, your employer may match maybe 50 cents or so. And among the companies where we've seen this, either a suspension or a cutback are such familiar names as Charles Schwab, Goodyear, Ford Motor, Goodrich, Textron.
But that's still a relatively small percentage.
It's a relatively small percentage, but many of these are big employers.
Okay. Now, why is it that even a rally isn't going to save people now?
Well, first of all, people have to make up for very large losses that they've seen in their plans. But beyond that, many people aren't saving enough. A lot of times when people change jobs, if there's not a lot of money in their 401ks, maybe $5,000, $10,000, they'll just cash them out and use them for some other purpose, which doesn't give you that little nest egg that gets to grow to something much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And often people aren't making very good investment decisions as well.
Now, talk about some of those investment decisions. I mean, you get an awful lot of choices with most 401k plans.
Well, one of the problems is there's been a move when 401ks first started. Maybe they had two or three choices, and people said, well, that's not enough. And now you see plans that have 50 choices or 100 choices. And for many people, that's paralyzing. They have so many choices, they don't know what to do, so they do nothing at all. And in fact, plans with the most choices often have lower participation rates.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that everybody said when the bubble burst and it looked like, you know, maybe that miracle economy wasn't so miraculous after all, but one of the things they said was, you know, hey, you're in this for the long haul, hang in. Have people done that?
For the most part, they have, and that's one of the bright spots is that most people are hanging in. 401ks as a whole tend to be characterized by inertia, which means you do something when you sign up and many people don't change. And that's kept people putting their money in month after month, week after week, which is a good thing.
And the reaction of people, though, when their company's contributions go down has been a little bit perverse.
Well, we've seen some people when their contributions go down, there has been a fall off in participation. And one of the real troubling things about companies cutting their contributions now is that we're really at a time where people need to be putting more money in their 401ks to make up for the losses they've seen. And also, people often talk about buying low and selling high. You're seeing less money go into stocks, for example, when stocks are a lot cheaper than they were.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything that people should do to make their most out of their 401ks right now?
First of all, what they need to do is make sure they're participating. The worst thing you can do is just throw up your hands and not put any money in at all. If it doesn't look like you're going to have enough money for retirement, one of the things you need to do is boost your contribution rate. Save more. And if you can't save a lot more, save a little bit more now. And when you get your next pay raise, put a greater proportion of that in. And if you're put off by too many choices, then just choose a simple mix of stocks and bonds rather than being paralyzed and doing nothing.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Ruth Simon, a staff reporter for the Wall Street Journal. She was with us by phone from her office in New York. If you'd like to join the conversation again, our phone number, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address, TOTN@NPR.org. Joining us now for the rest of our conversation about retirement accounts, Pat Regnire, senior editor for Money Magazine, co-author of the April cover story, Can We Fix the 401k? He's on the phone from his office in New York City. Good of you to be with us.
Good to be with you.
And also with us, Don Blandon, president of the American Savings Education Council, based here in Washington, D.C. He's with us from Orlando, Florida. Good of you to be with us.
Thank you.
Pat, how bad is it? I mean, given all the gloom and doom, aren't 401ks still the best opportunity?
Well, I think the important thing for people to realize is that 401ks are sort of functionally two things. They're a way to save, and they're a way to invest. As a way to save, they still work. They're a great tax advantage way to put away money. If your employer is still putting money on the table, you want to maximize that. That's all to the good. However, they're also a way to invest. And as Ruth pointed out, they were a tool that forced people to invest and kind of focus their minds on the markets. And investing well is tough. And you know, even in a down market like this, even the savvy people have gotten hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And what we need to kind of remember is that 401ks still work and are a terrific vehicle for savings. And we want to kind of separate that out from some of the investing issues and some of the investment mistakes that some people have realized that they made during a bull market.
And Don Blandon, doesn't what you're going to do depend a great deal on how old you are?
Well, it does, and it also depends on what you're making sure you're taking advantage of every plan that's out there in terms of being able to, for example, if you're over 50, do catch-up provisions in your 401k account. And, you know, just trying to figure out what you're going to need, and that's something that most Americans don't do. They don't calculate how much they're going to need in retirement, and they leave out critical features like who's going to pay for your health care. So unless you have a goal to work against, there's very little out there motivating you to participate at the fullest level in retirement planning programs.
We want to hear a lot of questions from you out there. Again, 800-989-8255. And let's go to Mike, who joins us on the line from Arlington, Virginia.
Hi. I wanted to ask a question about my strategy as I move forward. I actually pulled out of the 401k plan for my previous job in 2000 and have stayed out of it. And recently I just bought a house. And I'm looking at my investment portfolio, and the money that I had invested, I lost the majority of it in the 401k plan. I'm 28 years old, and I'm looking for guidance as far as what should I be doing at this juncture in terms of investing in the markets in 401k.
So is it time to get back in other words? Pat, do you think so?
Well, I try to be very careful about doling out a specific financial advice for all the obvious reasons. Let's talk about some kind of core principles that you want to apply when you're thinking about what to do with my 401k. The first one is that market timing is really tough for most of us to do. You know, it's a complex academic argument as to whether anybody can do it at all, but I think it's good for all of us as investors to be humble about our ability to call bottoms or call tops. The one way that you can make sure that you're always putting some money in near a bottom and getting a bargain price on some stocks is to essentially dollar cost average. So you're buying you're buying stocks every month, which means that you tend to be buying you use a set amount of dollars, which means that you tend to be accumulating more at the cheaper prices than you are at the higher prices, and that sort of keeps you in, and that's a pretty proven strategy for evening out your returns. While you can find a lot of people right now who say, you know, we're near a market bottom, this is a great time to buy, and I would sort of tend to instinctively concur with that. None of us really know. So I'd like to see people stick to a discipline where they're always putting something in, and now is as good a time as any, is something to start with. And the second thing is to really think about how much money you can really afford to lose. A lot of people got very aggressive in their 401k plans near the end of the bull market, and I don't think that's surprising. I mean, we saw sort of the typical 401k plan being about 70% in stocks near the top of the market. In hindsight, it looks like that was probably too much, but for younger investors, it may not be. The key thing is not to think about how old you are or how long you have to invest, although those are important, but to think about how you react when you lose money. If you lost some money in this recent crash and you radically changed after the fact how you invested, so that you then had considerably less in stock, that's kind of telling you that you weren't really as comfortable taking on the kind of risks that you were taking on as you thought you might be. You aren't quite the long-term investor that you thought you were. I think, you know, you still probably want to continue to be building in stock. This is certainly a better time to be buying stock than it was, obviously, in hindsight, 3 years ago. But you may never want to actually have quite as much in stock as you did at the very top, because you want to have enough in that you never get afraid to stay in the game, so to speak.
Mike, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Before we go through the break, I should let people know that the Federal Reserve, keeping a close eye on the economy, has held a key interest rate steady. Most people expected that. Policymakers opened the door to a possible rate reduction in the future in the event that business conditions take a turn for the worse. So it appears that they are still worried about the possibilities of a recession. We're going to be back after a short break with more of your questions about 401k and retirement plans. How bad is it? How much has the crash changed your plans? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address, TOTN@NPR.org. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the health of your retirement account. Are you among those who toss your 401k statements in the trash because they're too depressing, or are you riding out the bear market? Have you changed the way you allocate the money in your 401k? Our phone number, 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. Our guests are Pat Regnier, a senior editor at Money Magazine, on the phone with us from his office in Manhattan, and Don Blandon, the president of the American Savings Education Council. And, well, let's get some more questions. Our next caller is Bill, who joins us from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Hi. Well, my basic question is this. After the 10 biggest banks that do investing in the country were fined $1.5 billion, and from the statements of the people involved, they seem quite unrepentant and actually didn't have to say they did anything wrong. How are we supposed to have confidence in any kind of a situation like that to keep investing money in a situation where none of the crooks went to jail and $8 trillion kind of just evaporated into thin air?
You're talking about the recent decision about the investment bankers who sort of didn't admit that they'd done anything wrong but took a huge fine anyway for apparently telling people to buy this or sell that when they didn't really mean it. Don Blandon?
Well, rebuilding investor confidence is clearly going to be a number one priority of the Securities and Exchange Commission, and particularly their Office of Investor Education. It's going to take a while before we see investors returning who were skittish to be in there to begin with, and then seeing not only themselves but others they care about take some hits and some losses. Clearly, there is a problem of confidence, and I don't think there's a kind of a quick fix to this. It's not a matter of saying y'all come back in, we fixed it, because I don't think they have. But we're going to have to build some confidence back for the average investor.
Bill, you were trying to say?
I was just going to say, as far as the SEC goes, they did nothing. Essentially, it was a prosecutor from New York who did something. The SEC went along with all this and just, you know, closed their eyes and pretended nothing was happening. And even when something terrible for most of us out here with our money in this situation, they just acted like, oh, well, you know, those things happen. Well, if you look at the way the stock market's moving right now, you can tell that it's big banks doing buys, doing sells, and moving it up and down so that's where they make their money in the short term, the short moves.
You were referring to, I think, New York State Attorney General Eliot Spitzer. Pat Regnier, in your article you said if there is a crisis in the 401k system, it is a crisis of confidence.
That's right. I mean, you know, one of the things that has happened since the crash is people have pointed to the 401k system and they've said this is a ripoff, this is a scam. And, you know, I don't think that there's any point in us being Pollyanna-ish about this. I mean, investors really got walloped. The ordinary guy or woman who invests was sort of brought into the market at the riskiest time to be there, which is, of course, when it always happens. When people come into the market, stock prices go up, and when stock prices are high, that's the riskiest moment to be there, and that's when you're going to see incentives for fraud and fiddling. It's when it's basically profitable for the crooks to do what they do. So people were brought into the market and got walloped. And the problem is, You can't walk away from it. There's not a great for most of us now. There's not a great option on the table besides using our 401k and kind of figuring out how to protect ourselves within it and how to invest in it correctly. Hand in hand with the rise of the 401k went the not necessarily decline, but certainly the declining importance of the traditional company-funded pension, where you knew what you were going to get at the end if you stayed at the company long enough. There are a lot of reasons for that. I think probably one of the big reasons for it is that the typical employee or potential employee isn't very good at looking at a pension plan and saying, this is worth something to me. It's not a great way to attract talent. It hasn't proven to be a great way to retain talent, the traditional pension, versus the 401k, where people have a balance they see that can be built up. The one institution that was always pretty good at saying pensions matter to us and we're going to fight for pensions were unions, and particularly in the private sector workforce, unions aren't that strong, and they haven't been there to push for pensions. And frankly, you know, I don't see corporate America having a lot of incentive to go back to the traditional pension. Frankly, they at this point, they can't afford it.
A traditional pension being the defined benefit plan as opposed to the defined contribution plan that is typical of most 401ks.
Right. I mean, that's sort of a euphemism. Defined benefit means, you know, you pretty much know what you're going to get at the end, and defined contribution basically means you only know what you put in.
Right. Okay.
Could I ask one more question?
If you make it quick, Bill, we've got to get some other people.
Okay. One other question is, how can we trust pension plans like a state pension plan when those people that are controlling those plans got their noses burned just like the rest of us? I mean, it's faulty information, fake information that's coming out of these situations. That's the problem. I'm really curious about why is nothing essentially being done?
Pat, do you have a quick answer?
Well, I think that while, you know, it's true that a lot went wrong on Wall Street, good pension managers, the people who really know what they're doing, they may have gotten hit with a few stocks that really, you know, where something wrong was going on. But the smart managers, and frankly some of the state pension managers are among the better managers around, know how to diversify around those risks. You know, by and large, it is the public pension managers who have been leaders in kind of getting institutional shareholders to be good stewards and to try to force companies to do better.
Okay, Bill, thanks very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Let's go now to Doug, and Doug's on the line from Salt Lake City.
Hello, Neil. This is Doug, Salt Lake City. My situation is this. I had been investing in my 401k basically to the max. I was with a small company and was laid off in late 2001. And basically, when the severance package was gone, what there was to live on was my 401k.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I can see just listening, number one, that I hadn't set aside any short-term savings to live off of in such an eventuality. But being in high tech in the late 90s, it didn't seem like something I had to do. Anyway, so basically I went from a position where I had a pretty decent amount, you know, over $100,000 in my 401k, to now I'm in a situation where, you know, a bankruptcy later, I finally have gotten another job 18 months later, but where I'm in serious debt to the IRS.
Hmm.
And I'm just curious, number one, if this is I would suspect, especially in high tech, it would be a fairly common situation that's happened to people. But two, you know, is there any possibility of relief from these penalties and other burdens that, you know, that basically have people who've had to go through their retirements to live off of in layoff times, you know, to be able to get back on their feet?
Don Blandon, is Doug alone?
No, Doug's not alone. Let me ask you a question, Doug. Have you seen a financial professional at all? Have you seen anyone like a certified financial planner practitioner?
I haven't. I got a referral last week to someone who specializes in recovering from bankruptcy and hopefully helping me deal with the IRS.
Well, that's probably a person you ought to talk to. You might also go to the Financial Planning Association's website. They have a free service on there that they set up post 9/11, actually, for a lot of folks who found themselves in difficult positions, having lost their jobs or for some other reason that related to what was going on post 9/11, and have set up a free advisory service to at least get some basic initial questions answered. Financial Planning Association, and the questions are, the consultation is from CFP practitioners who they have, who have volunteered their services to reach out to the many Americans who are in similar situation to you, Doug.
Great. Okay.
Good luck, Doug.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's try Nora, and Nora's with us from San Jose.
Yes, hi. I was just listening to the radio, and one of your guests had mentioned that 401ks were still a good way to either invest and save. And my question is, my husband, he had been spending, putting in the maximum amount that he could into his 401k. He's now 49 years old, and basically lost over half of his retirement savings. So now, not only was it he lost his investment, but also his savings. And I think that 401ks, because it can be used as a savings tool as well as an investment, there's a lot of risk that's being put onto people's retirement. Just as somebody had mentioned, that pensions are no longer in existence, that now the individual has to protect himself.
There are fewer and fewer defined benefit pensions. They're not entirely out of existence, but there are fewer of them, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, Pat Regnier, I think that was you.
Yeah, I mean, I think, we said in our piece that the 401k is, in a sense, like a vast, uncontrolled social experiment. It sort of happened by accident, the way this business sort of grew. Comes out of a tax loophole. That's what we're referring to when we call it the 401k. And, by the end of the 20th century, this was the key way that Americans were, in air quotes, saving for their retirement. But in fact, what they were doing is they were putting money at risk in the market. You can use your 401k to put your money into a money market and essentially keep that money completely safe. But the reality is that you can also use it to put 100% of it in your company stock, and then it can go to zero. You can use it to put it into, a highly aggressive mutual fund. As long as the bull market was going on, that looked okay. It seemed like it was okay to have people investing by themselves. It seemed like it was okay for people, referring to your last guest, to not frankly have enough savings set aside. I don't want to make an example of him, but in a sense, that's what happened to this whole country.
Mm-hmm.
And by savings, I mean money that is relatively liquid and that you can get at. This country had a lot of debt offset by money at risk in the market and not a lot of actual cash that people had access to. So, the sobering reality is that people need to be more realistic about the risk in their 401k, and they have to see that though the 401k is a savings tool, a lot of what you can do in a 401k is investing, and investing means that you can lose your money.
But I think, Nora, I don't mean to put words in your mouth. I think a lot of people saw this as a promise and a promise taken away.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we were doing the right thing, because the defined benefits plans were, at least where he was working, were no longer in existence. We were saying, okay, well, we're going to continue to save, so we were doing what we were supposed to, quote-unquote, do, and so we were religiously putting in the maximum contribution. And then, our dream of being able to retire 50-55 was just vanished because of, the stock market just taking a plunge, and that we weren't that aggressive. I mean, we had stocks and bonds, but still,
mm-hmm.
His portfolio went down over 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Nora, do you know what kind of choices did your husband have? Did he have sort of a large array of choices? Were they mutual funds, or was he just kind of putting money into sort of various kind of blind investment vehicles?
No, they were mostly mutual funds.
Mm-hmm. Depending on, you say your husband is in his late 40s, is that right?
Yes, 40.
Yeah. I mean, to some extent, losing money is a part of this, and I don't want to sort of say that it's okay because it's not a good thing to lose half of your retirement nest egg. But there is time to rebuild a lot of that, through kind of a careful savings program. And I think this is a good time to kind of get yourself educated about what you need to do to begin to rebuild some of that nest egg. But I think that
quickly,
the financial services industry does have a lot to sort of answer for, and employers have a lot to answer for sort of not helping you make the right decisions.
Nora, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
We're talking about 401ks on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's try now Jamie, who's on the line with us from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
My question is, I have heard that 401k, that I should fully fund my 401k before I start a 529 for my kids' college, and I wondered what your guest opinion was on that, or if I should have both, even though I'm not fully funding my 401k.
Don Blandon, any advice there?
Well, certainly you've got to look out for yourself first. If push comes to shove, you can get a loan for college. Nobody's going to give you a loan in retirement to fund your retirement. So you've got to really take advantage of your retirement plan, tax-advantaged retirement plan at work first, look at a 529 as an option to save for college, although there might be some other options. The other thing to do is make sure you've got the steps in the right order. For example, get out of credit card debt, because if you've got credit card debt and you're even getting, say, 18% credit card debt charged, you're going to lose if you don't pay off that credit card debt first. And then, as we've heard from this program, make sure you've got an adequate amount of emergency savings set aside that you can dip into if an emergency comes up. And then you can take advantage of the tax-deferred programs to save for retirement, and then also look at options for saving for college. I'm down here with college savings experts from all over the country, and they would agree with that as well.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thanks, Jamie. Email question from Doug Montgomery in Madison, Wisconsin. I was recently approached by the person who represents the company that manages my 401k plan to think about switching to a new kind of account, that 401k, but better. I believe he called it a 457. He said I could withdraw the money at any time, even before retirement, if I had to. Do you know anything about that, Don?
That doesn't sound right to me. Pat?
I have to confess, it's not my area of expertise.
All right. Well,
I mean,
then
there are 403B programs and 457s, but anything that comes of a program of that type that says you can withdraw without penalty at any time sounds a little bit like the president's recent proposal for the lifetime savings account.
Well, we'll talk about that when we come back on the other side of the break, but let's get a quick question from Kathy in Sioux City, Iowa.
Question. It's more of a request for your callers to say some more about people losing money in their 401k. I'm an investment representative here in Sioux City, and of course I hear this a lot. People call me and they're in their 30s and their 40s, even in their early 50s. They're losing money in their 401k. But the thing that people don't understand, the investing public, is that while until you bail out, sell, lose your opportunity, your investment is still working through the reinvestment of dividends and interest to buy you more units of your investment.
So if the market goes up, then you'll reap the benefits.
You have more horses running to the corners, you know, or to the finish line. Now, this is cold comfort if you're 64 and a half. But when people are in their 30s and 40s and they're telling me how much they lost, and, you know, after 4 years you can't say, well, did you sell? You didn't lose if you didn't sell. I mean, that's disingenuous because they see the value go down. But they have to accept, it's kind of like an article of faith, accept the cycle and understand while that they're buying shares at a cheaper price and accumulating something so that when the cycle comes around. Mm. And then the other question is, what is your alternative? You cannot retire on a $3,000 a year investment in your Roth.
Kathy, thanks very much. It's been a hard time for faith, though.
Thanks, I understand.
When we come back, we'll discuss some of the newer options that are on the table, proposals for lifetime savings accounts and the like, and we'll also talk about a money story, another money story, Saddam Hussein's withdrawal of almost $1 billion. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, a look at the newly released closed-door transcripts of Joseph McCarthy and the legacy of McCarthyism. If you have a personal story about that era, we'd like to hear about it tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Today, we're talking about the best way to recover the value of your 401k and maybe hold it up a little bit, even during a bear market. Our guests are Pat Regnier of Money Magazine and Don Blandon, president of the American Savings Education Council. And Don, there are new proposals on the table from the Bush administration, ideas that the president hopes will encourage retirement savings. Can you outline them for us briefly?
Well, probably the most bold proposal, and it's given a lot of people food for thought, is what's called the Lifetime Savings Account proposal. And that would allow anyone, regardless of age or income, to contribute $7,500 a year and make penalty-free withdrawals at any time. The contributions would be made after tax, but any earnings would accumulate tax-free, and you could withdraw the money as tax-free money, and you could also withdraw it for anything you want to withdraw it for. There would be no restriction on what the withdrawal savings could be used for. So basically you'd say, you know, I'm putting money in this account up to $7,500, and at some future point I can choose to use it for anything I want to use it for. And there's been some concern that that's going to cause a leakage from the current retirement savings programs.
Mm-hmm. Pat, where is this proposal in Congress, and how much would it change things?
Well, I'm a financial reporter. I don't spend a lot of time in Washington, but the last time I was there, it sounded pretty dead, or at least weak. Didn't seem to have strong support. The tricky issue is, what would this do for the 40% of Americans who have no pension plan at all? I mean, clearly, if you're in a position to put money into these plans, this is a good thing. But the other question that people want to ask is, what's it doing for the people who don't have a serious retirement savings plan at the moment? One problem that you may run into with this is that, you know, a lot of small companies and a lot of Americans work for small mom-and-pop businesses only have a pension plan, only have a 401k plan, so that the owner of the company can have a pension. And if the owner of the company is in the position that he doesn't have to deal with all of the sort of paperwork and rules that's involved in setting up a pension plan, and can put money into a lifetime savings account and a retirement savings account, they've lost some important incentive for helping their employees save for retirement.
And that's an important thing to point out, that I think 40% of workers are involved in 401ks, just as many don't have a retirement plan.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's get a last question from John, who's on the line with us from Hilliard, Ohio.
How are you doing today, boss?
Okay.
I've got a few life insurance policies and a little liquid savings and a Roth IRA. And my IRA is in municipal bond funds. Whenever they ask me what my investment goal is, I tell them the preservation of capital. And my 401k has not been too badly hurt because I'm in one of those basket investment groups, which is listed as conservative. So I earn enough money to pay my fees, and I think I earned all of $7.50 last year. Well, that's better than losing money.
Yeah, but the friction's, well, anyway, go ahead.
Well, here's my question. I want to leave my, I want my insurance policies to gather dust in a drawer, and I don't want to touch my liquid savings for obvious reasons, and I want to leave my IRA alone. If I play with anything, it's a 401k, but when I look at the literature that our group annuity contractor provides, I am lost. So what I would like to know is if these gentlemen can recommend a resource, hopefully online, but a resource for getting simple explanations of what I could expect from Janus or Scudder or T. Rowe Price, where I could get simple information to help me make investment decisions for my 401k money.
Don Blandon?
Yeah, I would reference that website again, since you did want something online. Go to fpa.net, N-E-T, Nonprofit Education Organization, Financial Planning Association. Ask that question of one of their CFP practitioners, and you hopefully either will get a response or you will get some other direction on where to go. That's really kind of one of the things I would recommend is review your insurance policies again. I'm not quite sure why you have three of them collecting dust in a drawer. And what we find sometimes is people with too many insurance policies find out that they're, in the long run, working against one another. So make sure that that's part of your review process.
Well, how do you mean working against one another?
Well, let's leave that for another time. You might want to take a look at them. Pat, what would you recommend other than a subscription to Money Magazine?
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, you've just given me a golden opportunity for a plug. I think seeing a good financial planner, particularly for kind of complex decisions like this, is always a good piece of advice. There are a number of other websites that I look at a lot. Morningstar.com often has very good advice on handling investments like these.
Okay, thanks, John, very much, and good luck. And I'd like to thank both of our guests, Pat Regnier, senior editor at Money Magazine, on the phone with us from his office in New York. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
And Don Blandon, the president of the American Savings Education Council, who was with us by phone from Orlando. Good of you to be with us today.
Thank you, Neil.